everybody, and welcome to season 7 of Move Your Own Minute. Again, I want to thank all my guests and listeners for helping make the past 6 seasons such a success, and more importantly, so much fun to do. This season, we will continue to yippee-ki-yay-yay through the Die Hard series with the 3rd film in the franchise, Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. For those unfamiliar with the premise of an MXM podcast, it was originated back in 2013 by Pete the Retailer and Alex Robinson, who started the Star Wars Minute. They have so far completed seasons on every one of the 11 Star Wars films. We're all waiting to see what they're going to do from now on till they decide when another Star Wars movie is going to come out. Not them, Lucasfilm, or Disney, or whoever it is that's doing it. Obviously, if it wasn't for the hard work that they've been doing over the past 11 years, most of us would not be doing films, or not be looking at films in this particular fashion. If you go to the Movies by Minute website, you will see that there are approximately 250 MXM podcasts out there, and that number is still growing. So as I always say, you know, if you go there and you are, you know, find a film that you love, go take a listen, send your thoughts to the hosts, let them know, even if it's been a few years, if you've enjoyed what they've done. And if you see that your favorite movie's not there, you can go yourself and create your own podcast and be like the rest of us crazy people who do these films minute by minute. There is a Facebook group for Movies by Minute, which there are a lot of helpful people there. They have helped inspire me. I mean, obviously I'm on my 7th season, but you know, when I was starting out and ever since then, the people on the forum are very, very helpful. So I want to give them all a quick shout out to that. You know, I've made a lot of new friends over the last years, over the seasons, and they've all been very helpful in helping to get the show to continue going in the same fashion that it's been for the last 6 full seasons plus what we are now. On a personal note, I want to once again thank my good friend Jay Cluett of the Deep Blue Sea podcast, who hates getting thanks for this, but he's always going to get it. What can I tell you? He finally convinced me 7 seasons ago to begin this, and I can definitely say that without Jay, I would never have started it. He has been very helpful in me continuing with it too. Not that I planned on stopping, but it's always nice to get encouragement from the sidelines. So in addition, I want to thank Travis Bowe for once again doing this season's logo and the poster art. And I also want to thank David Brooke for the musical intro and outro that you've listened to at least part of them before you can hear my voice this season. And at the end of this episode, you'll hear the second one. This season, we have 26 weeks of shows that will be delivered to you every weekday from now until approximately the end of October. So sit back, enjoy. And we have 129 episodes where my weekly guests and I will begin to dissect this amazing movie, which is basically the end of the original Die Hard trilogy before they added on all those extra films. And we will be doing this in minute detail, 1 minute at a time. This season, we have a bunch of new features. We're going to be doing McTierney Monday, Trilogy Tuesday, Jesus Hump Day, Off the Beaten Track Revenge Edition, and I have a brand new feature for Friday, which is called Name That Movie. As always, in the final episode, I will tabulate all of those various responses, and you get to see what order my guests and I rank the top 5 movies in each of those 3 categories that we're going to be doing top 5s for. My guest for this week, once again, is none other than the aforementioned host of the Deep Blue Sea, Jay Cluett. Welcome back to Yippee-Ki-Yang with me again, Jay.
Rob, I really don't enjoy this method podcasting you've started doing. Well, I had no warning for today's show. I am hungover. I didn't get any sleep. I just got a phone call this morning to tell me to come and record. I don't even know what we're doing today.
Oh, I just think maybe you need dump trucks to clean out your apartment
I think so. No, I'm thrilled to be back here, Rob. Only part of what I just said is true. I'm not hungover.
Yes, thrilled. That's the only thing that's not true.
I mean, who can say? I had more time to prep than a phone call. I had a few months ago. I've had years, I guess. It's ever since you started doing Die Hard, it's always on the cards. This has come around. And this is the film I've been waiting for. Everything you've done so far has been build up to Die Hard with a Vengeance, as far as I'm concerned.
And now you're here. Now we'll get to hear what Jay has to say about what Jay's been waiting to say for seven seasons.
It's not just what I have to say; it's what I have to listen to. This is the because the previous six films, they're kind of there's a lot's been talked about most of them, less so about Die Hard 2 perhaps, which I still love. But Die Hard with a Vengeance, along with the Sylvester Stallone film Daylight, were my two first ever favorite films. So
wait a second, but I don't think you saw either of those in the theater, did you?
I didn't. No.
Right.
I'm not from a big film watching family.
Well, that I know, but still, you know, to choose two movies that essentially came out within a year of each other, you know,
choose these kinds of things. These things choose you.
They're both
New York-based disaster films to an extent as well, which I didn't pick up on until recently. And I hadn't been to New York at the time.
I was going to say, I doubt you were traveling to New York in 1995 or 1996.
No, I was seven or eight.
I know.
Yeah. Which, you know, I mean, I went a few years later, I guess. But I don't know what it is necessarily about these films, but I think... I saw them on TV, loved them, but I wasn't the kind of kid in the kind of family grown up where like I'd watch the same film again and again and again. This is just like, hey, that film I like is on TV again 6 months later, and I just watched Die Hard 3 again. And I think it was just the film that always was on TV and I watched it often, and so it just kind of sunk in as being one of my favorite films, and I loved it, and I still do.
Oh, wow. And now you get to talk about it 1 minute at a time.
And it had been a few years since I'd last seen it, so I was very happy to revisit it for this. So.
Oh, wow. Very cool. I mean, you don't remember the first time you saw it, though, do you?
No. Like I say, it wasn't like a big notable experience. It was just sit down with my parents and watch what's on TV, and it happened to be Die Hard 3. And I remember enjoying it. Although, I think I always fall asleep before the ending. Now I don't watch it as often, so
no, but when you saw it recently, you said you've...
Well, I saw it recently. I stayed awake for it because I was going to be covering it on a podcast. And, you know, I was...
Not the last few minutes.
but it's good to have context. But everything involving the helicopter at the end is stuff that I just kind of drift out of, generally, when I've watched it in the past. I'm not saying it's bad. That feels like, you know, the Lost World, Jurassic Park, the kind of the stuff in San Diego feels like a different film.
Yes.
That's what this kind of feels. This feels like the film kind of ends when they get off of the boat and John makes the phone call. But then there's this whole other scene, which makes sense for the story and everything. But that always feels like just a different... That's like the cold open to the next film.
Okay, well, I mean, a little bit of a spoiler alert, but... You do realize that there's a reason for that.
I don't. I've looked nothing about this film. Nothing.
Okay, so I'll give you two reasons, but you're going to have to wait probably 125 episodes from now, plus minus, in order to find out the real information about it. But I'll at least give you a little bit of something to whet your appetite. So first of all, the original script has a completely different ending about what happens. And they have a deleted scene, which was the original filmed ending that they changed. And then they created the one that we currently get to watch.
Okay. So I look forward to hearing about this.
Yes. So I got to say that of the three, the one that they do have in the film is the best, which I guess doesn't say much about the other ideas, but... That's the way it is.
Fair enough.
So, yeah. So, minute one of Die Hard 3, or Die Hard with a Vengeance. Wait, in England, it's called Die Hard 3? Or is it called Die Hard with a Vengeance?
Die Hard 3 is just quicker to say. It's called Die Hard with a Vengeance. But I think this was the first Die Hard film I saw as well. That might help. Why I like it so much.
Okay. No, because I know that, for instance, Die Hard you know, Live Free or Die Hard, the next Die Hard movie, yep, which we hopefully will do, you know, either a season or two from now. Outside of America, it's just known as Die Hard 4.
All right, it's known as Die Hard 4.0.
Sorry, 4.0, right.
Okay. Yeah. Die Hard 4. You're correct. About tech. It's right. Digital stuff.
That's right. But no, so I was actually curious if this one was, you know, was also referred to differently outside of the U.S.
It's, so, no, it's Final of the Vengeance, which is a wonderful title,
I think. Yes. That is correct. So minute one of Die Hard with a Vengeance begins with the 20th Century Fox logo and ends with a shot of the New York City skyline at dawn. So before we get into the minute itself, let's talk about some of the stats of the movie. So first of all, do you know that this movie had a different name originally? It was not known as Die Hard with a Vengeance?
Was this prior to it being, I think when it was written, it wasn't written as a Die Hard film. Is that right? It was written as something else that kind of got co-opted into being a Die Hard film.
Right. It was like originally, that's right. It was written as a script called Simon Says.
Yep.
And when it was decided that it would become a film in the Die Hard franchise, so they changed it to Simon Says Die Hard 3. Simon Says : Die Hard 3.
I hate that so much. That's horrible. That's horrible.
It's possible. I agree. It was written by Jonathan Hensley, who has an interesting career. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say that he has become a top filmmaker, like we all would have loved for that to have happened, but it didn't. But this was one of his first major scripts. And obviously, you know, he had to change things around to fit in with the Die Hard universe, I guess you can say. Sure. He also wrote, he has 20 scripts that have been produced. And some of them you've heard of. You know, he did Jumanji. He wrote The Saint. He wrote Armageddon.
He was an executive producer for The Great Con Air as well.
Yes, and he was.
Uncredited writing on Con Air as well. Hooray.
That is right.
Good for him.
That was one of the things I was going to mention.
Sorry. Oh, he also did uncredited writing on Virus, a film we recently covered on Deep Blue Sea.
Yes, podcast. I've seen that also. And unfortunately, his writing didn't help make that one any more interesting.
Well, I loved that film. So I'd never even heard of it before.
Right. I mean, he also helped write The Rock.
On in 60 Seconds. It's on his Wikipedia page. He has uncredited writing works and also executive producing.
All right. Ah, okay. Right.
Oh, and he wrote and directed The Ice Road recently. Mm-hmm. Liam Neeson. And not terrible Liam Neeson film.
I wouldn't necessarily say not terrible. It just fits in with everything else. You know, it's a typical Liam Neeson film.
I think, you know, he's made some awful ones, and this is slightly better than those. I would say.
Okay,
it's watchable.
Yeah, it is watchable, but it's not something that's rewatchable. No. You know that's
proven by I haven't seen it twice. But I will watch.
I'm not even going to go there, Jay, because I don't think you. When was the last time you saw a movie twice?
Die Hard with a Vengeance.
No, my point is, you know, going back chronologically, when was the last year that you saw something more than once?
Oh, I mean, I saw Barbie twice last year.
Okay, all right. I don't know if that was the greatest choice, but okay.
I mean, it's a great film, in my opinion. You disagree?
And you have the right to that opinion. he also was the writer on 4 episodes of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, which was a show that I enjoyed. It wasn't as good as, you know, any of the Indiana Jones movies, but it was just fun to see all the different adventures that he went through as a kid. So before they made this the third movie in the Die Hard franchise, they actually toyed with the idea of making this a Lethal Weapon movie.
I can see that. Yeah,
they decided that they would rather do it with Die Hard, which I think it works better because, you know, it wouldn't have been in New York. They would have had to do it in L.A. And, you know, I don't know how they would have done a lot of the things that they did in this movie, because it has a lot to do with the fact that both John McClane and Zeus Carver do not know each other. You know, but to have, like, you know, two cops that are partners doing this type of stuff, I don't know if it would have been as effective.
You could retool the script. You could, instead of having them not know each other, you just, at the start of the film, have one of them piss the other one off. And so they just kind of
annoy each other
and having to still work together.
I'm glad they did it this way. Let's put it
I think it works. But you can always retool things to fit the different mold.
Yeah. You can, but it depends on whether it'll work. You know, that's the whole thing. This was not the first choice of the third installment of the Die Hard franchise. They wanted to use a script called Troubleshooter, which was all about a character fighting terrorists on a Caribbean cruise line. They decided that it was too similar to Under Siege, which had come out 3 years earlier. So they decided that they didn't want to do that. They, you know, they passed on it, and that eventually was it became Speed 2. The whole idea of Troubleshooter. So I have a feeling that it's a good idea that they didn't repurpose that into a Die Hard movie. It probably would not have been as good.
Yeah. Speed 2 is not great.
Yeah. Now, do you know who the first person was who was offered the role of Zeus?
Sinatra. Frank Sinatra.
No, I don't know. Lawrence Fishburne.
Okay, yeah.
And apparently this was the second time that Lawrence Fishburne turned down a role that Samuel L. Jackson took over. The first one being in Pulp Fiction. He was offered it, and he decided he didn't want to do it, which is very interesting. I think both of those were mistakes on Fishburne's part.
I think so too. But then I'm happy that he didn't pick them, because we now have Samuel L. Jackson's incredible career whilst also still having Lawrence Fishburne's incredible career.
Oh, for sure. But my point is that the question is whether Samuel L. Jackson would have had as great a career if he didn't have these two roles to propel him. Yeah. You know, I think Pulp Fiction is what really put Samuel L. Jackson on the map. You know,
Who knows? If Fishburne had taken this role, maybe he then wouldn't have appeared in The Ice Road in 2021.
Who knows? Who knows? So the movie was released on May 19th, 1995, and there was talk about holding off the release because of the fact that there was the Oklahoma City bombing a month earlier, and that they didn't want to, you know, show terrorism so soon afterwards. They decided in the end that they would still release it on time. Do you know what the scores are on Rotten Tomatoes for this movie? You have any idea?
I do not. I rarely check.
Okay, so reviewer rating. What would you give it? You know, it's 1 through 100%. So what would you think?
So am I guessing what Rotten Tomatoes has given it? Okay.
Yes.
I would say this is going to be well liked. I'm going to give this I'd say like a 70, 72, somewhere around there.
Okay, so it has a 59% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which means that it is considered rotten because it's 1% lower than what you need to become fresh. But if you talk about the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, so that number is higher, and it actually reaches 83%.
Is there just some kind of does Rotten Tomatoes have something against Sam Jackson? Because 59% is where Deep Blue Sea is as well, which, you know, is a crime.
Okay. The question is whether it's because of Samuel L. Jackson that's 59%.
Oh, I tell a lie. Deep Blue Sea has recently gone up to 60%. It is fresh again. It always waves around that fresh, rotten. It's like
it's because of all those people listening to the Deep Blue Sea podcast.
It must be.
They've gone and changed the their opinions on the movie.
It's teetering on that precipice. One review either way pushes it each direction.
That's right. All right. So more questions for you, and we're not going to go into this as deep as we've done in the past with this type of thing, but in what spot do you think it debuted on the weekend, you know, with the box office, you know, in the box office. Where do you think Die Hard with a Vengeance debuted?
Can you tell me what was number one the previous week?
Crimson Tide.
Okay. I'd like to think this could unseat Crimson Tide. I haven't seen Crimson Tide, but I'd like to think this could unseat
Crimson Tide. You've never seen Crimson Tide? Oh, Jay.
Well, get to that later in this episode, Rob.
Wait a second. If you ever want to do an episode for Deep Blue Pod on Crimson Tide, let me know. That takes place in the water.
We'll get to that later on this episode. I have this. I'm going to say it debuted at number one. It should have.
Yes, it did. It did. Good. It debuted at number one. And it
blew Crimson Tide out of the water.
Pretty much. It debuted with $22 million, and Crimson Tide that week only made $11 million. But it came in second. And rounding off the top five was Forget Paris, which came out that weekend also. While You Were Sleeping, which was in its third week, and French Kiss, which was in its second week.
Zena.
All right. So in the second week since it debuted, so where do you think? Do you think it stayed in the top spot or it was pushed down?
Well, that depends. Did anything new come out?
Yes, there were two new movies that came out.
What came out? What new things came out?
Casper and Braveheart.
Oh, this probably went down to number two, maybe even number three.
Thanks.
So what do you think?
I think that's good counter programming. I'm gonna say it's dropped down to number three.
It dropped down to number two.
Okay, it was was Braveheart will beat it? Or
no,
Casper beat it. Great.
Casper also had $22 million on its opening weekend, and Die Hard with a Vengeance dropped down to $19 million, which that's not such a bad drop if it only went down $3 million, you know, from the first to second week. Braveheart was number three with $12 million. Crimson Tide dropped down to four, again with $12 million, which is interesting because Crimson Tide made more money this week than it did the week before when it only had $11
million. That happens.
Well, it also was Memorial Day weekend. And then the finishing off the top five was Forget Paris, which also jumped up. It went from $5 million to $7 million at that week, but it dropped down in its numbers. So how many weeks do you think Die Hard with a Vengeance stayed in the top 10? And do you think it ever reached – do you think it ever went back up to number one?
That's a leading question, so I'm gonna say yes, it did. That's a question I wouldn't ask if it didn't happen. So I'm gonna say it did get back up to number one, and I think it stayed in the top 10 8 weeks. I don't know.
Okay, one of those
bad American box office.
Okay, well, it stayed 7 weeks in the top 10.
That's close,
and it never reached number one again.
I never went to see it. That would have helped come to a different country.
Yeah, I don't think it would have helped. It probably debuted. I know here in Israel, it came out in July. Sure. So I'm assuming that it probably came out in the summer in England also at the same time.
Summer in the city? In the summer.
That's right. That's very true.
I'm just going to check now if my internet loads. I clicked the button. There we go. UK, it came out in August 18th.
All right, there you go.
So I had turned 8 by that point.
Ooh, congrats.
Not old enough to see this.
Probably not. Especially if your parents are not avid moviegoers. You know. So that's understandable.
I was taken to see Toy Story that year.
Okay, that makes sense. Toy Story is not a rated R movie.
It would be an odd film, it's a different kind of Toy Story.
Yes, that is true. So where do you think it fit in the domestic box office for the entire year of 1995?
Probably below Braveheart. I'm not sure what the highest ranking films of 95 are, but I'm going to say it's in the top 10. Let's go with number four.
It actually is it's number 10.
Oh, okay. Great.
Well done, it made $100 million in the domestic box office.
Sure.
Okay. And any guess as to what other movies might be in the top 10?
Toy Story?
It is in the top 10.
Braveheart?
It is not in the top 10.
Casper?
It is in the top 10.
I can't think of other 95 films. What other films came out in 1995? So Braveheart won the Oscar. What other Oscar films were there?
There are no other Oscar films listed.
Then I will stop even trying to think of things.
Sorry, that's not true. There's one. The movie that probably should have beaten Braveheart.
The movie that should I was trying to think of we talked about this recently, Apollo 13.
Yes.
And there was probably a Bond film out this year as well, I'm guessing.
There is. And it also is in the top 10.
GoldenEye. Yeah, GoldenEye.
That's right, GoldenEye.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know, I can't think of whatever.
Okay, so the top 10 for domestic was Toy Story with 192 million. I'm not going to give the numbers for everything, just to give you the, you know, the range. So basically, Toy Story was 192 and Die Hard was 100. But after Toy Story, yeah, Batman Forever, Apollo 13, Pocahontas, Ace Ventura When Nature Calls, GoldenEye, Casper, Jumanji, Seven,
sure,
and Die Hard with a Vengeance.
So Seven is 9.
Yes.
That's unfortunate.
Very good. Okay. It's not 7 of 9. It's 7 is 9.
No.
That's very good. Okay, so now let's talk about the worldwide box office of 1995. So where do you think Die Hard with a Vengeance fits in there? And do you think it was in the top 10?
I think it's in the top 10. This feels like the kind of film that does well worldwide. So I'm going to say it's higher than 10th place.
Which you would be correct on.
You've got a Bond film, Pixar films tend to do well outside. Let's say I'm going to say it's in the top three, number three.
It is. It's in the top three.
Okay.
It's actually number one.
Oh, excellent.
It was the highest grossing film globally in 1995, making $366 million. Number two was Toy Story. Number three, GoldenEye. 4, Pocahontas. 5, Batman Forever. 6, Apollo 13. 7. 8.
Excellent. Well done, everyone involved.
That's right.
Making that happen.
That's right. 8 was 101 Dalmatians. 9 was Casper. And 10 is one of your favorite movies dealing with water that came out in 1995.
Waterworld.
Yes.
And everyone says that film was a flop. I mean, in the top 10 worldwide of the year.
That's right. It made $264 million worldwide. It only made $88 million in the U.S. And that's probably why. They probably are looking at it from the perspective of it, you know, not doing well, you know, in the U.S. markets by calling it a flop.
I know you don't live there anymore, but your country, America, needs to stop doing this. Needs to stop looking at things just from this internal perspective. I don't understand why there's even like a page saying this is how much money it made in this country. Just look at the worldwide. That's the only figure that should exist. I don't understand why, like, oh, because it still counts. It's still money that goes into the pile. Who cares if it came from your little section or that section? Just throw that table away.
I think you're right. I think you're right, but
you're part of the problem.
I'm part of the problem.
Talked about how you just talked about you've signified you've set out the top 10 from in America. Next season, don't do that. Just do worldwide. Not being part of the problem.
Thank you. If you're not part of the problem, that was Die Hard 2, not Die Hard 3. But thanks for the callback. and where do you think it ranks on IMDb?
Well, oh, what score it has?
Yeah, what score?
I thought you meant like in the top 250 films. I doubt it's in there.
And unfortunately, it's not.
Yeah. Score out of 10, probably somewhere in the 6.5, somewhere in that region.
7.6.
Oh, fantastic. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, because, I mean, do you remember what Die Hard and Die Hard with and Die Hard 2 were?
I do not.
So Die Hard is within the top 250. It's at number 118 with an 8.2.
Makes sense.
And Die Hard 2 has a 7.1.
Slightly less than this. Oh, 9.5 less than, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, higher than I thought it would be for Die Hard 2.
Really? Interesting.
It's less well-regarded, I think.
Okay, that's fair. And what do you think about Live Free or Die Hard or A Good Day to Die Hard? Where do you think those both rank?
I think Die Hard 4.0 is going to be less. I think that's probably going to be 5.9, maybe, somewhere in that region, just below 6.
It's actually, once again, before you guess on A Good Day to Die Hard, you should probably know the true answer to this one. So Live Free or Die Hard or Die Hard 4.0 is a 7.1, which means that it basically is tied with Die Hard 2.
Sure. I like that film. I'm looking forward to it. I hope you cover it. I'm looking forward to it.
That is the plan.
A Good Day to Die Hard. I don't think they have numbers low enough. For A Good Day to Die Hard, I don't.
They do have numbers low enough, but, you know, surprisingly, it has a 5.2.
That is shocking. That is appalling.
Yes.
That's no.
That's really, really high.
That's really, really wrong.
Yes. That is definitely true. Okay, that's all the general information that I wanted to give about the movie before we dive into seeing what happens in this minute, which, you know, as with most credit minutes at the beginning of movies, there isn't much that happens. The minute starts with us once again seeing the 20th Century Fox logo. We've discussed that to death over, you know, back when in Die Hard, so we don't need to talk about that one again. I always just love the sound because it always reminds me of Star Wars. For some reason, like, that's the sound that reminds me of Star Wars. Anytime I hear 20th Century Fox's fanfare, it takes me back to thinking of Star Wars.
I'm happy for you.
I don't know why.
Because you saw Star Wars so much, and that's what happens before it.
Maybe. I think it has to do with the fact that when I was a kid, you know, watching the spotlights, I always thought that they were like lightsabers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Who knows? And then we get the next production credit for a company called Synergy, which is Synergy Pictures Entertainment. It was a studio that was created after Carolco. Basically, Carolco International Pictures turned into Synergy. They founded it in 1989 by a man named Andrew Vajna. And it basically closed up in 1998. So it only lasted 9 years. And basically, Disney took over all the rights for all the movies. So basically, we're going to be talking about a Disney movie.
Yeah, I mean, all of these films are on Disney Plus in the UK. So
there you go,
and have been since before Disney bought Fox.
Right.
Well, of course, yeah.
Right. I mean, they did have some great hits. They did Tombstone. They did this movie, Evita. Then they had a whole bunch of box office bombs. They did Super Mario Brothers, Renaissance Man. Color of Night, which is another Bruce Willis movie. Have you ever seen that one?
No.
It's a really bad detective movie with Bruce Willis.
I think it's on my watch list. I just haven't got that yet.
You can push it down even further.
Okay.
Judge Dredd. And the movie that basically forced the company to close was Burn Hollywood Burn. So that's about the Synergy. You know, we continue with the credit continuing. I mean, I gotta say, I do like the graphics that they use for Synergy. I think it's really cool.
it's very nice, slow kind of turn.
Yeah.
Slow rotating.
Yeah. Blue shape. Which is really funny because, I mean, if this took over after Kuroko, that basically also had a big C. So they like, you know, they like companies that have a big C as their logo. And then we get a shot of New York. You know, we can see that it's that it could either be dawn or dusk. Based on what happens over the next few minutes, it should be dawn. But, you know, I can't really tell the difference on the picture like this, whether what they're filming is dawn or dusk. I'd like to believe that this is dawn.
Yeah, I think we can assume it's at least supposed
to be. No, I know what it's supposed to be.
This is a... Yes.
I'm aware
it's
of what
it's a one-day film.
Yes.
This is just a regular day in New York, this film.
Yes. That it is. And then, you know, we get a few seconds of looking at the Brooklyn Bridge. And then the title card of Die Hard comes the same way that it did in the original Die Hard. You know, you have the die coming from the left side and hard coming from the right side and just banging them together. I believe in Die Hard 2, Die Hard 2, they also had that, where it comes from both sides. And then a few seconds later, we have the words "with a vengeance" that superimposes on top of it. So, again, nice title card.
You got three words here. So, the "with" comes from the left, the "vengeance" from the right, the "A" comes from us.
That's right.
It comes from the screen into it.
Yeah.
We're part of it now.
It's as if it goes through the A, or the A comes through us, basically.
Yeah.
It's a nice way to put it together. And then once again, we see the entire New York skyline as it's going through, and we start having some music playing. Are you familiar with this song from anywhere else besides here?
I am aware of the song of the Love and Spoonful, Summer in the City. I don't know if I've heard it. I mean, it's probably been used in a bunch of other stuff. It feels like a song made for summer city-based films. Right. None come to mind, but I like the song. It's a good song.
Yeah. It's a great song. Yeah, I was surprised that it actually was written and released in 1966. You know, I would think, I always thought it was more of an 80s type of song.
Love and Spoonful, not a band I'm very familiar with. I have heard of them, but mainly through this song existing. So I didn't know when they were around. 60s. I guess, 60s does make sense.
Yeah.
Are there any other notable Love and Spoonful songs I should know?
I'm not familiar with any others.
Okay.
I didn't really look into it enough to try to figure it out because I like this song. I mean, like, I didn't even think about to go check anything else.
The fact that you don't know any kind of answer to the question, I think.
That's true. But I'm not a music person. I mean, when we have, you know, David on in a few weeks, or when we have Nick on, maybe they would know something about it. I don't know.
Yeah, but they didn't kind of permeate popular culture with another massive hit, is what I was trying to get to.
Yeah. I mean, it was actually considered, when it came out in 1966, they thought of it as something that they called like futuristic singles, which other songs that fit into that are The Beach Boys' Good Vibrations, 8 Miles High by the Byrds, and Reach Out, I'll Be There with the Four Tops. So I guess it sort of makes sense that I would, you know, have made the incorrect assumption that the song was made later, meaning that it doesn't necessarily fit in with the type of thing you would have, songs that you would have in the 60s, because it sounds like something that you would hear later on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a great song. And it really fits in here. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about it tomorrow because it, you know, I like how it how it depicts everything going on. This was actually their only song by the Loving Spoonfuls that made it to the number one spot. They did have a few others that made it into the top 10, but this is the only one that went all the way.
Okay.
So I guess it is the most notable song by them.
Yeah. Oh, well done to them for getting a number one.
Yes.
It was their only one, but they got one. That's good.
That's right. That's right. And then, you know, the shot lingers, and we get another shot of the New York skyline as the minute closes out, while we see the sun, and there's a plane flying in the background. And it happens to be a great shot. I think they did a nice job with that shot. One other thing to mention that since this movie doesn't have any more credits until the end of the movie, I mean, this was directed by John McTiernan, who was brought back to direct another Die Hard movie after doing the first one so well. Unfortunately, Rennie Harlan must have been, becoming too popular by 1995, and he was too busy. 1995, he did. What's that pirate one that he did?
Cutthroat Island.
Cutthroat Island. There you go. So he was apparently too busy with Cutthroat Island to deal with this movie.
I would say being too popular, never a problem Rennie Harlan has had.
Okay, too busy. So very much. Too busy. Too busy. How's that?
Yes. That's better. Yeah.
Okay. And obviously, based on our conversation, this movie stars Bruce Willis, Samuel L. Jackson, and someone who we haven't touched upon yet is Jeremy Irons, which maybe we'll talk about later this week. Maybe we won't. Who knows?
Maybe we will.
Maybe. Maybe.
We will. I can tell you now, we definitely will.
Jay is giving away some of the stuff. Spoiler.
He's great.
Yes, he is. All right. So you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
I mean, we've covered far more than I thought we would. So I'm done for this minute.
Okay. So the first, this is going to be a very strange week for the script because most of it does not appear in the movie. So we're going to have some stuff to talk about. So
I was going to say, why would we promote the script? We're like 20 seconds into no script.
But there's a lot going on here that I'm basically breaking up over the course of the week because there's so much that goes on at the beginning of the script in this movie. Okay. So it starts off with a black screen throughout the title sequence. An assembly room of people are laughing. The titles go up, the laughter dies, and the voice in the microphone says, "Suffice it to say that the rookie cop from New Jersey finally did learn how to read a suspect his rights." People laugh. "It is my great pleasure to present the City of New York's Distinguished Service Medal for 1993 to Lieutenant John McLean." Cheering, flashbulbs popping, etc. Next titles show up. A lawyer is conferring with his client. "I understand your frustration, but I can't work miracles. There's no way you can patch things up." A cough. The client clears his throat. A Zippo lighter flicks. An exhale of smoke. Another cough. McLean says, "No." The lawyer says, "A court always favors the mother unless it's proven she's unfit." "Is she unfit?" "No, she's not unfit." "Then there's no chance you'll get custody." "I'm sorry, John." Then we have the third title show up. Rowdy voices in a crowded bar. A jukebox plays Frank Sinatra's "Summer Wind." Bartender says, "Last call, drink up." We hear the bartender's footsteps coming closer. "Another Johnny?" McLean says, "Yeah." "Why don't you go home?" "Home? What's that?" The bartender sighs and says, "Okay, Johnny." Then we get the fourth titles. The bar noise rises to a crescendo and dies, and we fade in. The exterior of Manhattan, aerial establishing early morning. The sun is rising over the World Trade Towers. It's a July morning. The city is already steaming. So, you know, the way that the script does this, it establishes so many things that we find out through the course of the movie, so I can understand why they would cut it out. But I still think that it was a missed opportunity to tell us what's happened to John McLean, you know, over the last since the last film. And I think it's an effective way to do it. What do you think?
I think you're right, but I do like how the film does it, and we do tackle it later on this week,
right?
With just the state that he's in,
right? No,
you can piece it together.
It's a combination of both. On the one hand, it's something that I understand why they would cut it out, but on the other hand, it's something that it's too bad that they did have to cut it out.
Sure.
I think that's what it comes down to. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow with more of the introduction of the script, because it, like I said, most of this week is just completely chaotic when it comes to the script, comparing it to the movie. All right, so every Monday we have a segment called McTiernan Monday, where my guests will give their top five John McTiernan directed features. So, Jay, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up? Now, this is going to be easier than most of the other ones, most of the other top fives that we've done over the last few seasons, because he's only done 11 featured. He's only done 11 featured films. So, you don't have much choices.
He's only done 11, but I have seen far more John McTiernan films than I have Frank Capra.
Okay.
Which is good.
Which is
so
good.
I have seen six. I have a selection of six to pick from, which is good. So my number five is Thomas Crown Affair. I haven't seen it recently. I know I saw it when I was younger, and I remember liking it, but I don't remember much about it. So that's my number
five. Have you ever seen the original or
I not? Have. The original was great. I love Steve McQueen, as you know. So the original is great.
Okay.
Number four is Predator. Maybe a little lower for some people, but Predator is if you don't know what Predator is, I don't know what you're doing listening to this. Go watch Predator. It's great.
Right.
it's excellent. Number three, Last Action Hero. A film that was ahead of its time when it was released. Should have been an immediate classic.
I definitely agree that was a wasted opportunity.
But it still exists now, so we can still go back and think, hey, actually, this is fantastic.
Yes.
Another one. Number two, you may have heard of this film, Die Hard with a Vengeance, is my number two. Love it, love it, love it. But number one, I don't think you can really get any better than Die Hard.
No.
As previously discussed on previous seasons of the show.
Yes.
Maybe notably missing from this list is a film I have seen, but The Hunt for Red October does not rate highly for me. I don't like submarine films.
Uh-huh.
This is why when you mentioned Crimson Tide earlier, I was reluctant to say yes, because I don't want to talk about it. I find submarine films boring. I don't understand why there seem to be so many of them. They're all the same. It's just they're like action films with no action. Jack Ryan films in particular, it's I don't know why they made any. I've heard people describe them as like, oh, it's the American James Bond. It's not the American James Bond, because it takes out anything that makes James Bond enjoyable, and it's excise from these films, and you just get the boring stuff left. Das Boot is the only submarine film that I rate highly, I think. But I've only seen that once, and I was going through a pretty tough week where I had to live in a hotel room for 2 weeks. And that's when I watched Das Boot, and I thought, this is great. I'm living in this submarine too. Because I empathized, even though they were in far worse conditions than I was. So I feel like I should go back and revisit Das Boot. I'm not saying Das Boot's bad. I think it's probably good, but that's the only one that I rate highly.
All right. Well, I will once again throw out the gauntlet. If you want to do Crimson Tide, I would love to do that with you on your show.
I will put it down on the list. I feel like I should give it a shot, because submarine films, they always have great casts. Like Hunt for October, you've got a bunch of actors that I would watch in anything. You've got like Sean Connery, Sam Neill, Stellan Skarsgård's in there, Tim Curry.
Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, but like Alec Baldwin, I can take or leave.
No, but Alec Baldwin back then is much better than Alec Baldwin now.
Sure, fine.
Not even getting into politics. I'm just saying, as an actor, he was much better in the 80s and 90s.
I know. he's one of those actors like, yeah, he exists. But like the other four that I mentioned, are like, I will seek out things to watch them in.
Right.
And then you mean this like Sean Connery's playing a Russian submarine captain defector, and he's speaking like Sean Connery the whole time. I should love this film. But then I watch it, I think it's really happening in this film, and it's two hours of nothing. Yeah.
I don't know if Simon's gonna be happy listening to this part of the show.
I'm sure he won't. Because he and I have discussed this before.
Well, because he beat me. I'm trying to remember what movie it was up against for movie of the month all those years ago. It might have even been The Great Escape, where I think I lost by one vote.
Maybe
for that. You can probably go back to your spreadsheet about that one of these days. But who knows?
That's the last, maybe the first time I watched it. I'm not sure. That's what I watched it for, that, and I don't remember that show, what my opinion was on it, but I remember nothing of the film. So
okay, that is fair.
Now, I know on the last episodes of these series, you always make me guess the top fives of the cumulative top five of everyone across the season.
Which you just did at the end of
the other day. Yeah, sure.
And you were close. Yeah, so.
I wasn't. I think, because there's so few McTiernan films, I think it could be interesting to try and guess what it is now, what it will be.
Now, feel free.
Because only 11. But even then, like, no one's putting Nomads in their top five. Because Nomads doesn't exist. It's fine. I'm sure you've seen it.
I actually have not.
Okay, well, you've got 26 weeks.
Exactly, I was going to say, but I do have time to still try and see it if I'm really interested. I might take up that challenge because of the fact that,
When it comes to the last episode, I thought that you should rank your top 11 John McTiernan.
Okay, I mean, I haven't seen Rollerball either.
Well, same. But again, you've got 26
weeks. Or the 13th Warrior. There you go, see him.
I'm surprised, given that you've seen everything.
Apparently not.
John McTiernan.
I now have three John McTiernan films to add to my list.
Well, I reckon the top five at the end is probably going to be Last Action Hero number 5, Hunt for October number 4, Die Hard with a Vengeance number 3, Predator number 2, Die Hard at number 1. I feel like that's a pretty steady list.
You're going to have to wait, and you're going to have to wait 128 episodes to find that out. We'll just have to wait and see.
I look forward to it.
Me too. I look forward to revealing it, because you never know. Maybe I'll watch Nomads and I'll be like, oh my God, this is an amazing movie, and it's going to like bump Die Hard off the list or something like that. Who knows?
From what I've heard, no, you won't.
All right. So, Jay, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Jay Clewitt?
Sure. That's first edit. Let's plug something that doesn't exist anymore, or does exist, but is defunct, because it's the most similar to Die Hard. Con Air, the podcast, is a similar show to this, where myself and my co-host Mark Hoffmeyer went through the entirety of Con Air, a Die Hard on a prison plane, scene by scene, 40 scenes. With a bunch of like extra bonus episodes sprinkled in. Had an interview with Ty Grandison Jones, one of the convicts on the plane, which you can find at Con Air, the podcast. As Rob was on for an episode, a bunch of your guests for this season will probably were on for episodes here and there as well. Yep. I'm assuming. But yeah, we finished that. It's a very enjoyable show. Con Air, the podcast.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie on Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movieonminute.com. And you can now find me on Instagram. So just look for Movie Rob Minute.
Finally. 4 years later.
Exactly. And if anyone's interested, you can also write me an email at movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay! Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah, hurrah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hurrah, hurrah! The men.
will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.